This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn, and you're listening to another episode of Good Things, a show where we talk to good people who are doing good things. Joining me on the show today is Roshini Mukaya, the founder and curator of the Malaysian Indian Anthology, a storytelling platform with a mission to break stereotypes and redefine the narrative around the Malaysian Indian community. Welcome to the show, Roshini.
Hello, Dash. Thank you for having me.
Perhaps you can start by telling me a little bit about the Malaysian Indian Anthology.
Sure. So basically, Malaysian Indian Anthology, or the acronym for it is MAYINAN, just for ease of saying it out. MAYINAN is actually a Humans of New York-inspired platform whereby I exclusively collect and I publish real-life stories about the lived experience of the underrepresented Indian minority in Malaysia. As long as you identify yourself as Indian, and Malaysian, you are more than welcome to submit a story and I'll be very happy to publish it.
And what inspired you to start this?
Honestly, I get this question a lot and I actually have two stories, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
The first story is about myself. So many years ago, actually, I was a theater actress and I actually faced so much challenges to even book gigs, specifically to get gigs to act in ads or, you know, TVCs.
Right.
I always get recommended so many times, you know, to casting agents because of my skills. Even though my skills are sufficient to get me to that stage, but when the casting agent, you know, asks to see my photo or video and I send it to them, suddenly I am not what they're looking for. And it does not escape me that my non-Indian peers of the same skill and caliber as me, they always seem to consistently book acts successfully, even shows, but I always don't, you know, which then makes me wonder, is it just a case of us not having sufficient nuanced Malaysian Indian stories that would then provide the demand for the casting of Malaysian Indians, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what. And I was wondering, is it that we just don't have enough stories about it? Maybe I should do something about it. And the second one is actually the story that it really pushed me to actually start the project. It's the story from my boyfriend, Kula. So many years ago, actually, Kula, he was working as a public school teacher. And at the very start of his teacher training, he was placed somewhere in JB, in a school in JB. And what he noticed at the beginning of his teacher training is that a lot of his students, specifically the Indian boys, so they tend to cling to him a lot, which was very, very curious because you don't expect this kind of behavior, right, I guess, from high school boys because they tend to be a bit more, you know, cool and detached maybe. These Indian boys specifically, they just kept, you know, hovering around him, just staying around him, asking a lot of questions. So he eventually asked them, actually, you know, why are you actually doing this? Just out of curiosity. And they explained that they've actually never seen a professional Indian man before.
Oh, wow.
Right? They resonated with his presence, his representation there as this professional Indian man. And I always get goosebumps when I share this story because I think that it's so powerful, right? That representation, right. It's so much needed. And I would say generally that's what MAYINAN is supposed to stand for. You know, I want people, you know, Indians specifically, when they look or read at the stories, to feel represented, to feel themselves in the story. That's what really inspired MAYINAN.
Yeah, it is very powerful, right? You know, when we think of representation, we're always thinking about these, you know, politics or in film, but we don't realize that, you know, even someone like a teacher can make such a big impact, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, this is actually a big challenge and a big gap is that we do not really have, I would say, a balanced amount of Malaysian Indians and minorities in the public education sector.
Right.
And that is a challenge, especially when you go into more rural areas and there are minorities there and then they don't have this representation that is, I feel it would have been so powerful and beneficial for them.
Now, Roshini, you say you want to redefine the Malaysian Indian narrative, right? What is the current narrative that doesn't quite sit right with you?
I have so much to say on this.
Yes.
I mean, maybe I'll go back to, you know, my previous anecdote, right, about how when I was a theater actress, I was trying out for gigs. What I noticed in my lack of gigs in the TVC/ads business is that, and this was very obvious, it showed to me in media what is their understanding of Indians, right? In Malaysian media, when Indian people are cast at all, what I've noticed is that we are used as token. We are someone who is always in the background to fulfill the diversity quota. Or, and this is when you do see an Indian person, you can think about maybe the last Indian ad that you saw. That is not a Deepavali ad, by the way. When you do see an Indian person in Malaysian ad or Malaysian media, we are casted in a subservient role, or just plainly, maybe the most common one is that Indian people are used as comic relief.
Oh, you know? Tell me about it. So it just puts me off sometimes.
Right? You know, people think that this is like American thing, like you know, like Apu in Simpsons, but no, it's also similar here. I know I don't want to say brand names, but honestly, if you just look up, you know, famous ads, even catchy ads, especially if you think about funny ads, it's very common. They probably use like an Indian element in there somewhere to make it funny. I'm not going to lie. If anyone wants to know what it is, you know, just DM me on my Instagram. I'll send you links, but it's true. And in fact, you know, it's not just my perception. In fact, one of my storytellers, and I published a story in my page, is a story about how, you know, they were an ex-casting agent. And she said that during a discussion, and they were casting for this role about this, you know, rich girl, this rich character. And her colleagues who were non-Indians specifically told her explicitly that there's no way that they can cast an Indian person because that is not believable.
Are you serious?
Right? Yeah. So obviously this was very, very terrible. And I think, and she is one of the few Indian person in that particular environment. She said that it was so toxic and this was so common that it is eventually why she left that industry. But yeah, this is a very common expectation or common belief. So you see that there is this single narrative, right? And there is this harmful narrative, I think, about what we see Indian people as. We see Indian people as, you know, we see them as servants, we see them as comic reliefs, we see them as impoverished, or maybe even an afterthought, which is such a shame because the reality is so, so, so far from that.
You know, we're talking about the position of Indians in Malaysia, the Indian identity. Do you remember when you first became conscious of your race? Is that something you've thought about?
Yes, I think if you're a minority, you cannot be helped.
Yep.
I think I became very conscious about my race, my racial identity when I went into primary school. Mm-hmm. So just to give a little bit of context, my parents were estate workers, like classic estate workers. So my Taman Perumahan and my community, so when the estate was abolished, my parents and all their estate friends and community members also moved into the same taman. So it was all predominantly Indian people. Right. So when I grew up, that's all I saw. Up until I went into primary school, which was a, you know, multiracial, typical SMK school. And I thought I led a pretty good life up until I went to school. And that's when I realized in respect to race, I became very, number one, I became very conscious of my socioeconomic status as an Indian person. I didn't realize that we were poor. And interestingly, so were a lot of other Indian students in my school. Very interestingly, Indian students were placed in the back classes. And I also noticed that suddenly beauty standards were so different. I never felt insecure, you know, or cared much about my looks up until I went to school. And maybe this is a girl thing. Maybe, you know, I mean, Dardash, you can tell me as well, you know,
yeah,
as a boy, maybe that might not be the case, but for girls, especially, I think beauty was very suddenly something so salient when I went into school.
You know, I faced racism myself, you know, my entire life, but the kind of racism I faced as a kid, as a boy, as a man, you know, are people thinking I'm gangster. You know, I once got fired from a job because they said Indians will steal things.
Ayo.
But I'm curious, what does racism look like for an Indian girl growing up?
I mean, I don't want to say something that is like the end all of all kinds of racism principles, but I would agree that the main things is definitely around beauty. And this is also corroborated by the fact that most of my story submissions, especially by women, is on the theme of beauty as well. You know, I'll talk about what I said just now again, where it was very hard for me to book certain TVCs, and not just TVCs, actually, it's even like print media, specifically for like cosmetics or, you know, those kind of brands. because I don't conform to their standard of beauty. You know, I recognize that obviously in Malaysian media, the standard is, you know, Malay beauty or Eurocentric beauty, but just generally, even as an Indian person, maybe I am not seen as a beautiful standard,
right,
which is a very harmful narrative to impart into more colored girls. Next, of course, is just this internalized colorism that we face, right? Because it's not just racism that people are showing externally, it's then we internalize it as Indian people and then we impose that onto our daughters and our sons as well.
That's right.
And a lot of my stories on actually about, you know, as I said, beauty, right? It's from all these young Indian girls talking about their own family members, kind of admonishing them for looking a certain way. And it's not like we can control how dark we are.
Exactly.
But it's, for example, maybe it's their mother or it's their father or their brothers or, you know, or just relatives kind of admonishing them for being darker. Why aren't they doing enough to look brighter or whiter or use fair and lovely? The common culprit is always fair and lovely. So there is a lot of internalized colorism that, you know, we are not pretty enough. We are not good enough for society. And then as you get a little bit older, it also shows in the friendships and the relationships that we get. I can talk about myself. When I went into, for example, university, it was a little bit of a challenge because, you know, especially if you're going to tertiary education, right? Indian people are a very small minority, especially for me. I went into private university where it's most predominantly Chinese population.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult sometimes to have friends because maybe they're not used to having an Indian friend before, an Indian assignment mate before. It also then cascades into your relationships. And this is I would say more controversial, whereby, you know, we have men saying, sometimes even Indian men say that they don't want to date Indian women.
I've heard that. And honestly, like recently, it was just a couple of days ago when a friend of mine and an Indian girl, she told me that a guy that she wanted to get to know actually told that, you know, he only dates Chinese women. And he's an Indian man. And it just blew my mind. Because, of course, there's nothing wrong with dating various races, you know, being in interracial relationships and all that. I myself have been in interracial relationships. But to come out as an Indian guy and say that I don't date Indian women...
Right. So it's very curious because, like you say, like, you know, sure, you know, date whoever you want, like do your thing. But to specifically exclude a particular race, you know, of woman or man from your relationship, well, I feel like that is very, 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 very curious because it goes to show as if, like, you know, we are like the worst of the worst or like you're so low in the totem pole, apparently. I would say these are just the common examples of racism that Indian girls and Indian women face. It's mostly around this idea of like beauty and just not being good enough for society, I would say.
All right. On that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'll be back with more with Roshini Mukaya, founder and curator of the Malaysian Indian Anthology. You're listening to Good Things, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. You're listening to another episode of Good Things, a weekly show where we talk to good people who are doing good things. On the show with me today is Roshini Mukaya, the founder and curator of the Malaysian Indian Anthology, a storytelling platform with a mission to break stereotypes and redefine the narrative surrounding the Malaysian Indian community. So, Roshini, what would you say is the most heartwarming or memorable story you've featured on the platform?
We have a lot of heartwarming stories and usually our heartwarming stories are focused a lot on family relations. Someone talking about the sacrifices or things that their parents, their grandparents have made. But I would say I have one most memorable story and this is actually the winner of our previous short story competition that ended some time ago. The story was submitted by a man called Robert Ram. So he's from our above 40 and above age category. And the story was about his grandfather. He was saying that his grandfather, Tile Kanu, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, said that his father was, you know, the bodyguard of a wealthy jaminder, i.e. a landowner in India. He was apparently an assassin. who was trained in martial arts and occult stunts, and he could kill people by touching them, which was, I was like, okay, that's interesting.
That's insane.
Right? So you have this like magical assassin character, and he had to then migrate to Malaya. So his grandfather migrated to Malaya because he got into quote unquote local trouble. Fair enough, he's an assassin.
Right.
I mean, he came to, you know, Malaya, then he changed his name so that he could not be tracked down by other Indian assassins. And interestingly, what happened was, so they came here, right? They became migrants here and they had children. And his son then became outstanding, I think, as like a scientist. Let me check. He was basically, his son, Rajagopal, was the first person to present a paper to the Department of Civil Aviation to suggest that Malaysia should launch its own space satellite. And because of this, his son was given a medal, i.e. the Pingat Pangkuan Negara from the King of Malaysia. I feel like this is such a interesting contrast from, you know, someone who's like from India, you know, who can kill people. And then just by going, making such a big change of his life, he came to Malaya. Obviously, he gave a very specific new type of education for his son. And then his son contributed to Malaysia in such an important way, i.e. to launch our own space satellite and got awarded for it. I feel like this is such an interesting story because it can show how much can change in just one generation if you extend the right opportunity. And it goes to show that, you know, anything is possible. I know like people talk about like the American dream or whatever, but I feel like, you know, we don't talk about the generational experience that Malaysian Indians have here as well. Like my life is so vastly different than my parents. And I'm sure it's much more different than my grandparents, right? So I feel like there's just so many interesting stories like this, but this is the first of its kind that I thought was very, very dramatic.
The most recent video, though, posted on the Malaysian Indian Anthology Instagram page is this story by Arati. And she talked about how when she was growing up, she would always say, I'm Indian, but my grandma is Chinese. And that really struck a chord with me just because of how relatable it was. Based on your observation, is this something that a lot of Malaysian Indians, particularly, I think particularly in the English-speaking community, feel growing up that, you know, they have to, they can't just be, I'm Indian. Yeah. They need to sort of have some sort of defensive mechanism in place, you know, like I'm Indian, but I can speak Mandarin. I'm Indian, but 1/4 of me is Chinese, things like that. Is this something you notice a lot?
I think, yes, I mean, I myself, when I was a kid, I'm just like Arati. So Arati is actually Chindian.
All right.
Likewise, I am actually also Chindian, but my mother was Chinese, but she was adopted into an Indian family. So I'm only biologically half Chinese. But even when I went into school, just by looking at me, you can tell that I'm not necessarily 100% Indian. Even that get me a different kind of reception with my friends, because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm Indian, but actually I'm Chindian. And then my friends are like, wow, that's so cool. So it started way back then as well. And I noticed growing up, I noticed this a lot. Like you said, you know, I'm Indian, but actually I can speak English. I'm Indian, but actually I went to university. I went overseas to study. I'm Indian, but actually now I work as an engineer, that kind of stuff. It's very, very common. And what I've come to notice from all this conversation with English-speaking, you know, primarily English-speaking Indians is that it's a harmful thing, but we have to admit that for some reason, we want to detach from being Indian,
right?
The label. And I think it's because the label Indian in Malaysia, it carries a lot of weight and it paints a very specific idea of what an Indian person is, right? Like, for example, just now, the casting agent who did not want to cast a rich Indian girl as an Indian person because it's not believable. Why is that? It's because when we talk about Indian person here, and maybe we as Indian community, we also internalize it, is that we think that an Indian person, like a typical Indian person is, you know, they will project an image of maybe poverty, lack of literacy, like Dash, you said just now, maybe even like a gangster. These are such harmful, harmful negatives. And imagine if you're just a student or a young professional or a person just trying to get ahead in life, these are harmful stumbling blocks that are, you know, challenging you or putting a halt to your progress from moving forward. So of course you want to move away from it. Of course, you want to deny it. I can admit, and this is a shameful thing, but I can admit when I was in school, I tried to move away from it as well. I went to a girls' school, and as I said earlier, I noticed that a lot of the Indian students were, all the Indian girls were in back classes, most of them. But by virtue of me being able to speak good English, and I got grades, I was in the first class, and I used to think that, oh, you know, I am Indian, but I'm not like the other Indian girls. But it's just a shame, because the fact is, actually, we are not inherently different, but we have somehow self-segregated ourselves, even within the Indian community itself. And this is then, the responsibility is now on us, especially if you are someone with more resources and more means, right? To be able to lend a helping hand to those who might not have had the same opportunities as us. Because the fact is, if all of us had been given the same opportunities, we'll be where we are now. But because we detach ourselves and we think we're above them, that bridging of that gap, it's not going to happen, unfortunately. That's just my reflection.
I'm ashamed to admit it myself, you know, because when I was at school, I always hid the fact that I understood Tamil and I emphasized that I came from an English-speaking family. I pretended that I didn't watch Tamil movies because I feel like even that has some sort of stigma and connotation. And a lot of this, I feel, you know, has to do with like you mentioned, the stereotypes that are already there about Indians, or also the racism and the, whether directly or indirectly, that I faced growing up, right? Because I remember when I was, I think, 11 or 12, a friend, a Chinese friend, coming up to me and saying, you know, you're not like those Indians. And at that moment, I felt very proud of myself because we wanted to detach so much from being Indian.
Yeah, exactly. We want to detach and we wanted to be accepted into society, into what is the majority culture. Like what you said, you know, I would actually go out of my way to specifically surround myself with mostly Chinese or Malay friends in my school for the entirety of my 12 years of school. I would say my closest friends were Malay and Chinese because I mean, number one, those were the ones that were in my class, but also because I made the intentional move for, I'm very shameful and I'm upset to admit it, but because I felt like maybe I thought we were better off. We were above our Indian peers. And obviously there's still a lot of unlearning and unpacking to do now as adults.
On the flip side though, Roshini, do you think that's a problem within our own community as well? Because earlier you brought up the colorism that exists in our community. But another thing is, I also feel that sometimes people in our community, they have this tendency to be the so-called, you know, cultural gatekeepers. For example, I read a post on a Facebook page called Brown Girls of Malaysia, where a girl, you know, she was really pouring her heart out. She talked about how she can't speak Tamil, but, you know, over the years, she's become more confident in herself and she accepted that, yeah, I can't speak the language, but that doesn't make me any less Indian. I'm proud of myself. And the barrage of hate comments she received, it made me so sad. You hear a lot of people, it's mostly Indian men, they will go after her and they will say, how can you say this? How can you, what kind of Indian, are you that you're promoting that people shouldn't speak the language and you are going to destroy our culture?
Yeah. It is unfortunately a very common thing and I can corroborate that because honestly, I've been running, you know, Malaysian Indianology for 2 years, right?
Right.
And I mean, I admit most of my storytellers are women, but especially when it's a story about women and they are going against the status quo. And I actually have one exact story like this. It's a story from Divya. Divya talked about exactly that as well. She can understand Tamil, but actually in conversation, she can't even speak it. So even with her mom, she speaks in English and then her mom responds in Tamil, but she can perfectly understand. And she was talking about, you know, it doesn't make her less of an Indian person or less of a Tamil person. And same thing, like you said, it's Indian men. Indian men coming in to reprimand her so much. It's actually one of our second most famous, in the history of 2 years, is our second most famous story, but it's the story that had the most engagement because of exactly this. I had messages in my inbox, I mean, from on the page, from Indian men asking me, please don't let this girl be like this. And then there was some Indian man, they would say, and he was so insistent, say, here are some resources for some Tamil class. Please ask Divya to attend one of this. And I'm like, he was so like, oh, I must do this for my community, I guess. He was so, so funny. And I said, you know, please respect her. She said that that's not an issue for her. If she wants to go to a Tamil class, she can, you know, do that at her own time, but we shouldn't force her. And he's like, no, 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 she must. And he followed up with me for 3 months to make sure that I sent the message to Divya, which of course I did not.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that we place so much focus, as what you had said earlier, we place so much focus and responsibility on women in general to be the cultural carriers. And when we feel like a woman has deviated from that responsibility, who's breaking away from that status quo, we feel a need to reprimand them. And I don't know why it infuriates men so much. I don't know. It's a bit hard for me to comment on this. I'm not going to lie. Maybe because I am a woman and I feel like this is very rooted in patriarchy. Also, there is an element of like pride, especially when you are a minority community. You want to go out of your way to preserve whatever heritage you have. And especially if you feel like women are the cultural carriers, that means they have more responsibility to preserve that, because you, out of fear that, you know, your culture might be assimilated into the major culture or it might be erased. So as Indians in Malaysia, that might be felt even more so. Is this a very toxic thing? Most definitely. And I don't know how to navigate this. In fact, after this story was published and I got all these really terrible hate comments, I actually put up for the first time like a comments policy on my page, just because it was so bad.
I think a lot of, like, especially these Indian men, they need to know that there's a difference between being proud of your culture, wanting to preserve culture, and sitting on your high horse, trying to force people into boxes. But anyway, yeah. What has been the best part about running the Malaysian Indian Anthology?
I mean, I've been running this page for 2 years, and I think what really keeps me going or affirms me is when I publish a story and there are comments of people feeling seen in it, right? Let's say it's a story about a young woman talking about her experience of actually just embracing herself for who she is, you know, even though she is darker in skin color or she is more modern than what her parents expect her to be. When I see the comments from, say, other younger girls feeling like, oh, I feel seen in this. I'm just like you. I resonate with this. I want to be just like you in the future. Then I feel very validated. I always enjoy it when Indians, Malaysian Indians, feel represented in our stories. Mm-hmm. They feel seen in our stories. I also acknowledge that I made Malaysian Indian Anthology as an educational tool, right?
Right.
So I also appreciate when non-Indians, they acknowledge that they learned something new. And it's not just about learning about, you know, our heritage or about like our culture, but it's just learning about what exactly are the challenges that Malaysian Indians face. Like, for example, the story about how English-speaking Indians, for some reason, we are detaching ourselves from the label. Why is that? So I feel like that those are very interesting anecdotes and stories to be heard by others outside the community as well. So I would say those are the two best parts about running the page.
And if Malaysian Indians would like to share their stories on this platform, how do they go about it?
If you are someone who resonates with the identity of being Indian and you are in Malaysia for a long time, then you are more than welcome to submit a short story. And I would say short meaning like around 100 to 200 words only to our link. You can find it on our social media platforms, Malaysian Indian Anthology, or you can just submit it straight away to the link bit.ly/story for Mayanan. Mayanan being spelled as M-A-I-N-A-N. Did I spell it correctly?
Yes, you did.
So yeah, it's bit.ly/story for Mayanan. And please feel free to read our stories on our platforms as well. We have a presence on Facebook, Instagram, and also Twitter under the name Malaysian Indian Anthology.
And people can also submit videos and stuff, right, which can potentially go up on your Instagram page?
Yes, correct. So this year, I'm trying something new whereby I'm inviting people to submit their stories via videos, because I noticed that it's even more immersive when you get to hear the stories being set out by the storyteller themselves. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can.
All right. On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Roshini.
Thank you.
That was Roshini Mukaya, the founder and curator of the Malaysian Indian Anthology, a storytelling platform with a mission to break stereotypes and redefine the narrative around the Malaysian Indian community. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, and you've been listening to Good Things on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.